Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. You know, I didn't run in the New York City Marathon yesterday, I promise you, but I kind of feel like it. I wonder how many people on this Monday before the 2016 election day, yes, it's finally just a day away, how many people feel the deep physical aches of marathon runners, or maybe you're in a fog of some concussion protocol. I feel all of it. I would thank you for listening if I could just remember who you are. Oh, right. The Takeaway audience. That's right. 2 years we've been doing this, and there's still a day to go. No October surprise. Nope, it'll have to be a November surprise now to affect this baby. And yes, national polls looking at the raw breakdown of the popular vote say this is a tight presidential race. Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick joins me to give us a final state of the race. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Hey, John, you sound like you're ready for it to be over.
No. I love this stuff.
Yeah, but we all do.
I do feel, you know, run over by a truck. That's for sure. But yeah, let me ask you a question. This has got to be true.
Sure.
Most hated person in Washington, D.C., I'm betting, is FBI Director James Comey.
Yeah, I think you probably got that right. And you saw over the weekend, people might have heard the news. You know, 12 days ago, the grenade that James Comey rolled into this race when he informed Congress that a new laptop that belonged to Anthony Weiner had emails on it, and that the FBI was going to search them. They got a warrant to do that. Then they had to rush the job because everybody's throwing bombs on Comey saying, you can't open an investigation and take overt law enforcement actions this close to an election. The FBI has now told Congress that there was nothing to see on there. Most of those emails were duplicates, and that it doesn't change, John, any of their conclusions from back in July that Hillary Clinton's use of a private server contained no criminality, nothing worth pursuing after the investigation they've already had.
So, Todd, the itinerary of the candidates today, that's pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, just to get it in at the end here, I went up to Pennsylvania over the weekend. You just got to go to PA. You know, I've been obsessed with Pennsylvania this whole race, John, and I'm driving around in eastern Pennsylvania in Northampton County. We're talking a little bit northwest of Philly, probably a pretty solidly pro-Trump county, I would say. I saw a guy alongside of the road driving a big white Chevy truck, and I pulled over because he had a huge sign in the back with an American flag on it. His name is Ed Orlowski. He's from Mountaintop, Pennsylvania, and he's been driving this thing around, so I talked to him.
I don't call myself an activist. I have never had so much as a bumper sticker on my car. The sign right now says Hillary, with a big universal no sign running through it. Underneath it, it says corrupt. Underneath there, it says white lies matter.
Can I ask you how much of your own money?
Is my wife going to hear this? I'd say probably $2,500 of my own. You know, these signs were not cheap. The frame wasn't cheap. The gas isn't cheap.
No, and you got a big truck.
But it's worth it. It's worth it. So,
John, just as I'm talking to Ed Orlowski on the side of the road, a trucker drives up to ask for directions. His name was Hamilton Santos, and he looked at the sign and kind of smirked, and I said, where are you from? He said, I'm from South Florida. I said, did you vote? He said, yes, for Hillary, because if you try to get in my truck, you wouldn't be able to drive it. Experience is important. Listen to Hamilton.
If you are not truck driver and I put you inside my truck to do problem, you cannot move the truck. I saw a lot of times in my life. Same thing. Political is very complicated things. It's not easy.
Hamilton Santos was really just talking about experience in the job. He said he respects Donald Trump, but that it's a job for an experienced person, and so that's why he was going for Hillary. But John, Pennsylvania is where I was, and the candidates crisscrossing now all across the country, both dipping in and out of Pennsylvania today. Donald Trump is in Florida, North Carolina, back to Scranton, Pennsylvania, Joe Biden's hometown, and then ending the night in New Hampshire, and then Hillary Clinton twice in Pennsylvania today, then to Grand Rapids, Michigan, back to Philadelphia for a big rally with the Obamas, and then a midnight show ender for Hillary in Raleigh in North Carolina. So those candidates crisscrossing all over the place.
The other big headline is the early voting trends seem heavily Hispanic and therefore possibly heavily Democratic.
Now, this is huge because this really may tell you where a lot of the rest of the race on Tuesday, Election Day, goes. Huge Latino voting surges across states that had early voting, John. In Florida, Latino turnout up nearly 130% from 2012, where Florida is basically tied. So that's a big advantage for Hillary. We saw huge increases in Georgia and North Carolina. North Carolina doesn't have a big Latino population, but Nevada, massive upswings in Latino voting in Nevada. And Clark County, which is where Las Vegas is, which is the Democratic stronghold now, John, finished early voting with 72,000 vote advantage for Hillary. When Obama won Nevada from Mitt Romney in 12, he had 71,000 as an advantage. So they've broken Obama's performance in Clark County, largely due to a Latino surge, and that bodes extremely well for Hillary in the early voting cycle. Then you have to look at African-American voting, which is going to be massive in Philadelphia, massively important, I should say. There are indications that that's down in some places, John, so that's a big part of the reason why you see Hillary Clinton going back to Philadelphia today, and you see the Obamas coming there too.
Finally, you began this race insisting that you were not going to mention Donald Trump's name, that was your personal boycott because you didn't think he was serious. We end it here, and there's a little ways to go in such a different place. Any thoughts?
Yeah, we really do. And when Donald Trump first announced his candidacy way back then in a field of 17 or 18 Republicans, I did say that I didn't want to talk about him on the air. And you're right, I refused to because I saw it as a self-serving kind of hucksterish P.T. Barnum style of campaign. And Donald Trump's mastery of the media and his understanding of media's incentives and biases hurtled him to the top of that primary. And here we are, John, like a year later, in a place where you have to talk about Donald Trump. And John, after this election, look, if he wins, he's president. That's a whole different conversation. If he doesn't, there's a reckoning that's going to go on, not only at the FBI and with James Comey, that stuff's coming, but in journalism too. And in how media, especially cable news television, handled the Trump phenomenon. But hey, there's no doubt there's been some real bright spots too. You know, one of the big issues of this campaign was Donald Trump's tax returns, which he has never released. So then also his charitable giving, which would have been contained in those tax returns. There's one reporter at the Washington Post. His name is David Fahrenfold, and he's taken it upon himself to drill down into all of the claims of charity that Donald Trump has made throughout his entire public career. And he's just done this meticulous crowdsourced job of trying to get as close as you can to the truth of Donald Trump's claims about charity. And I sat down with David Fahrenfold from the Washington Post in a coffee shop the other day here in Washington, D.C.
We've learned a couple of things. One is that Trump knows that he's supposed to be generous. He understands that that's part of the role of a wealthy person in America, and he wants to play that role. He wants to appear generous and has for many years, but that he's also for years tried to inflate his giving by promising things that he doesn't give or by giving gifts that are actually other people's money. We've seen that again and again and again. Whenever he has a chance to have somebody else pay for his generosity and him get the credit, he will. And in some many cases, he's willing to promise something publicly and then never deliver on it.
John, there's a lot more to my chat with David Fahrenfold, including the details of how he's crowdsourced some of the amazing facts that he's found out about Donald Trump and his charitable career. You can get it all on the website over at thetakeaway.org.
Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks so much, Todd.
You got it, John.